This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Making people laugh is hard enough. Making a living at it is another matter entirely. How do you break in? And how do you find jobs? How do you move from the opening act to headliner? And what does that pay exactly? How often are you expected to work for free? How much difference does an appearance on Leno or Letterman make? How much of your life do you spend on the road in seedy underground clubs? And if you do make it big, how do you stay there? Today we'll talk with a newcomer, Esther Koo, and with a star, Richard Lewis, about the stand-up business. Later in the program, the facts about planned and unplanned teenage pregnancy. But first, if you've been a stand-up or if you're doing that now, call and tell us what the business is like. Our phone number is 800-989-8255. Email us, talk@npr.org, and you can tell your story on our blog at npr.org/blogofthenation. We begin with Esther Koo. She joins us from a bureau in New York, and nice to have you on Talk of the Nation today.
Hello. Hi. Thanks for having me.
And you're a semifinalist on NBC's Last Comic Standing, so congratulations.
Thank you.
And do all those appearances on network TV translate into job offers?
Not necessarily. Definitely, it does help to have that TV credit, and mm-hmm. it helps to get better stage time at comedy clubs around the country. So, yes, it does, but, you know, you have to keep working at it.
And it uses up an awful lot of material, I would suspect.
Being on Last Comic Standing?
Yeah.
Actually, the auditions were really short.
So you had plenty of material left to use for the competition itself.
Right, yeah. At the New York round, the first episode, I only used up 4 minutes, and they only aired 1 minute. So it's pretty amazing. I still have lots of more material to go.
Yet you've been in the business for 4 years, as I understand it.
Yes.
And I know that you do, your resume says you did a lot of work at comedy festivals and that sort of, what is that like? And does that pay?
No, comedy festivals, actually, you have to pay to get into.
You have to pay them.
Some of them, yeah, you have to pay a fee for them to even look at your video.
Well, I guess that's how they make money.
I mean, there's a lot of costs involved with advertising the festival, trying to get people in the seats and stuff. So, I mean, if you win the festival, certainly you do get paid, you know, sometimes $10,000, you know. But there is a cash prize. But to be in the festival, a lot of times you have to pay.
And when you're just starting out and you're working at a comedy club, is there a set fee? Do you get paid depending on how many people come through the door? Or how does that work?
You know, it all depends on, like, when... If you're passed at a comedy club, you know, some clubs in New York City, I am passed and I do get paid for spots now, which is amazing. But sometimes you don't get paid, you know, sometimes you're just happy to get up on stage and for them to, you know, allow you to perform that night.
And you used the word pass. What does that mean?
Well, there are certain comedy clubs and they... get people to, you have to audition to be passed at the comedy club.
Oh, to get through the, get on stage.
Right. To be able to say, I'm a regular at, you know, this club or whatever.
I see. To be able to say that to other people. And I know for bands starting out, a lot of them play for free, except for they get a percentage of the people who come through the door holding their pamphlets. Is there anything like that in the comedy business?
Yes, there's a lot of that, actually, because in New York City, there's just so many comedians that there's stages where you actually have to pay to perform. to be able to get 5 minutes of stage time, they take $5 from you at the door.
So just like you're coming in to watch.
Right, yeah. And then a lot of times they let the audience come in for free because it's a lot of amateurs at an open mic, for instance. And so, it, you know, it's not guaranteed a good show. You're just trying out new material. So you pay $5, the audience gets in for free, they get drunk, and you get up on stage and try out your material.
And 4 years in the business, you've obviously got some talent because you're a semifinalist on Last Comic Standing. And as I understand it, you still have a day job. You work full-time in a dentist's office.
Oh, I work part-time in a dentist's office.
Okay.
Right.
But that's how you pay the rent.
Right. That's how I pay the rent until I can make comedy my sole living.
Well, joining us now from his home in Los Angeles is, one of the best-known comics in the business, Richard Lewis, famous for comedy tours and, of course, his appearances on HBO's Curb Your Enthusiasm. And, Richard, you've been in the business.
I could say it in 1 minute.
Go ahead.
Hey, first of all, it's a pleasure to be on your show.
Thank you.
And good luck with your 4 years. What memories, man. Is she still on the air?
Yes, she is.
Oh, listen, good luck with everything. And
remember, thank
you. It's all about the craft, and because 99% of the people we're going to be dealing with are unscrupulous pigs. So,
do you think so?
I know so.
Oh, my God.
It's like wildlife, so it's your craft and the audience. And hopefully you'll make a great living at it. And, when people start out in the business, and she's done it for 4 years, but they say, when I started, it was like 20 people, like Crystal and me and Leno and Kaufman, and, there were more, but, we had some good spots, and there's only a handful of clubs. But the point is, we never dreamt we would make a living at it. We were just, it was like being in Paris back in the 18th century, being in these cafes with other artists. We just said, this is the only thing we can do. We're idiots. At least I said that. And I tell people, whatever art you're in, ballerina, comedian, writer, if you're going into this thing other than for the passion, check out now, because that ain't where it's at, man. I mean, she knows that. I mean, you got to really want this more than anything, because it's really tough and ruthless, and a small percentage pay the bills doing it. So, if you can really hang in there and not look back, that's the way to go. But I forgot my preamble.
And what's
ready?
That? Go ahead.
Very fast, and then I'll answer everything, because you had 19 producers call me for the last hour. Number one, Larry David just finished a Woody Allen movie, and people ask me this. So he says he'll probably come back for a 7th season of Curb, which I'm thrilled to be part of, because I think it's psychotically authentic and wonderful. Number two, I got married for the first time late in life, which I think is I had to, because I'm a recovered drug addict and alcoholic for 14 years. And the reason my book is out now with new work is because my demographics is like teenagers to people in their 60s and 70s. So if I can save one life by putting it back on audio and doing some new work, that's why the book and the audio is out. And that's it. I'm on the road constantly, and I'm off to God knows where, Pittsburgh and AC and Atlantic City and Minneapolis, and who cares? Now let's talk about the road.
Well,
I'm all yours, and thank you. And George Carlin is laughing at me now in heaven, saying, how come he didn't curse and get thrown off the air? One of the great, I should say this, to my fellow comedian. George Carlin and I work very differently. I can say that at 60. I'll be 61 this weekend. I have about 2,000 pages in the last 4 years of my computer, which has about 20, 30 hours of new material. I scroll it in the cities. I try to do about a half hour of new material each set, and then ad-lib the rest. And then if I'm doing stuff that's cooking the last month, I'll do that. But if the audience is good, I'll take it to another place. George, who had a record number of specials, it doesn't mean my way is right, but I couldn't do it his way. I would call him and say, how's the special coming? And he'd say, I have a minute and 2 seconds left to write. And, he did it like a play, and which is, there's something to say about that, too. But I couldn't go on stage knowing what I was going to say. It's mm-hmm. a different way to work. It's sort of scary. But, if you don't have fun on stage, what's the point of going on? So yeah. There are different ways of working. So,
well, let's see if we...
I just miss George a lot. He was, he had a crazy life as well with drugs and rock and roll and all that stuff. And he was sober 3 years when he died, which I think bears noting, because... and I don't preach about it. I did it for me. He did it for himself. But, if a guy like George Carlin can get sober, and there's millions of George Carlin fans, and you're having a problem with drugs and alcohol, if George can get sober, anybody can. All right, I'll shut up. How are you?
Oh, good. let's see if we get some listeners involved in the conversation, too.
809. Well, I thought I was listening there. I thought she was done.
No. No one
tells me any of that. I thought I was talking about teenage pregnancy.
No, that's later in the show. We're just going to leave that alone. Let's see if we can get callers on the line, 800-989-8255. And Jack is with us from Monmouth in Illinois.
Hey, how you doing?
All right.
Hey, congratulations to both of your guests for all their different reasons they talked about. Now, I've been doing amateur stuff for about 6 years, and I wanted to see if both of you could speak a little more of the unscrupulous pigs.
What do you mean by that?
I just do open mics, and I've won a couple of contests, but I've never got a booking, partly because I don't live anywhere near a good network. But anyway, there is this amazing bitterness between especially upstarts like me that maybe I'm guilty of it too, but there's just like this weird tension between comics that just...
Esther Koo, is there
like
is there tension and bitterness among comics?
You want to go first, sweetheart? And sweetheart's not sexist, by the way. I apologize.
Go ahead, okay. Esther.
Is there bitterness? Yeah, I think so.
And how does it manifest itself?
People probably talk behind your back. I mean, when people see me, though, they're nice to my face, but then I hear something nasty that they said behind my back, you know? It's like high school. Comedy is like such a small world, you know? You see the same people everywhere, and people gossip.
That's true. That's all true. It was different when I started because there were fewer comedians, and people would actually hang out and help each other with their sets and get them ready for the Tonight Show. And it was more of a sister and brotherhood. The deal is this. I started with a negative tone. There are some wonderful agents and managers and people who are not just getting their 10%, or if they know their clients are sick and need help, they'll just send them out, and then they'll hear the news that they died. The bottom line is this. There's so many comedians that if you can't, everyone can have their authentic self if they just talk about their own lives. It's a real easy way to take other people's material when a guy leaves town or just steal, period. I mean, big stars steal. Comedians without talent steal. And, you know, if they want to live their life that way, that's fine. But the bottom line is that, you know, that side of the coin, to me, the artistic side, really stinks. But in terms of the business end, it's just like acting. They want the best actors, unless you're a huge superstar, the best actors for the cheapest amount of money. That's what their goal is. The same thing with people who buy comedians. They want the best acts for the least amount of money, and they'll do anything they can to put you in the worst hotel room, give you the worst accommodations, flying, you name it. So, you know, when you get some clout, you have to make sure you really look out for yourself, because really, only no one else will but you and hopefully some, you know, proper representatives.
Jack, good luck to you.
Good luck to you both.
All right, thanks very much
Thank
for
you.
The call, Jack. And we're going to ask Esther Koo and Richard Lewis to stay with us. If you'd like to join us to talk about the business of stand-up comedy, give us a call, 800-989-8255, email talk@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Neil Strauss, a culture reporter for the New York Times, once wrote of stand-up comedy, "There's only one thing more humiliating than being a stand-up comic, and that's trying to be a stand-up comic. That's the lesson I learned after 6 months trying to make it as a comedian. The bottom rung of the comedy ladder can be uglier, crueler, and more demeaning than in any other line of entertainment." In his book, The Other Great Depression, comedian Richard Lewis wrote that it's a capricious, self-centered, and cruel business. We've got two stand-ups with us today. Richard Lewis is among them. Also, Esther Koo, who's a rising star in New York City. If you'd like to join the conversation about the business of stand-up comedy, give us a call, 800-989-8255. Email us talk@npr.org. And this is Steve. Steve with us on the line from St. Louis in Missouri.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to know if when you were first starting out and, you know, kind of progressively as you got into the business, did you retain a lawyer or an agent or somebody like that to kind of manage, you know, a corporation for you, get your, you know, overlook contracts and that type of thing, or did you go on your own? And if, you know, you eventually retained that type of person but you didn't earlier, what was the difference that you noticed in terms of how you were able to shop around and get your name out and so forth?
Well, Esther Koo,
because it's easy for me. My high school buddy, who was graduated number one and then in Harvard, came out here and became a superstar lawyer when he was like in his 20s, and he took care of me for free until I could pay him. And the bottom line is this: if you have to have an attorney even early on, because they have to look over, because agents and managers come and go. I've had like 1,000. I'm down to like a dairy farmer in Iowa if I fire this next group. So, you know, my attorney looks at everything, and then I'll get a fax with like all these red lines, like, what are you kidding me? What are you nuts? Is this great? So you really need to have an attorney even early in your career when you think it's not important, because believe me, you can get a television show and be a featured on a show, and all of a sudden, if you don't have it looked at by an attorney, they can have you, you know, sewn up or severed for this kind of money you can imagine, and so you need
a show. Esther Koo, do you have an attorney?
I don't have an attorney, but I have a manager.
That arranges your jobs in various cities and that sort of thing?
Right.
And,
right.
And when you get paid, do they hand you a check or do they mail it to the manager?
They hand me a check and then I write my manager a check.
And you write the manager a check.
Right.
All right. Well, you may want to look into a lawyer, too, after that. Anyway, thanks very much for the call, Steve. Let's see if we can...
I think Steve just hung himself.
I think he did, yes. or had a nation to go to law school. Yeah. Let's go. TL is on the line. TL in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah. First, I'd say, Richard, on your...
Well, first, brother.
And good luck, Esther.
Thank you.
You know, and that's one good thing about being a female in the business, not that many, so you'll probably move up pretty quickly.
Oh, believe me. It's true.
Don't you think
there's like...
There's a lot.
And it's more now.
Yeah, no, it was much harder back in the day because it was sort of a man's. I know now I really believe it's the times have really changed.
The last
15, 20 years easily when Esther was in a playpen watching me do Letterman.
I'm close to almost 20 years, and I'm finding it hard to go get into the headlining spot. And one thing that makes it even tougher when you're if you're a feature act, you might make flight.
You can eat something with it.
Don't you don't know him.
Yeah. We don't talk about him.
Neil,
that's like a magician.
Everybody. You think I'm going to fly to Raleigh, North Carolina and pay first class and get $400 and come back? I'd put a gun in my head like taxi driver. I mean, look, what he's saying, what this comedian is saying is that it's a very different landscape for everybody. I mean, I've been doing this 38 years. I mean, I did Carnegie Hall 22 years ago. When I remember doing a club in New York, and I did it many times, Caroline's, and I had a lot of famous acts, friends who were stars come, and I didn't have that sitcom yet. And they would sit, and I tape everything, and very quickly they said, "Guy, all he needs is a break." And 3 months later, I got a sitcom with Jamie Lee Curtis. And 4 months after that, I was selling out 3,000 seaters and Carnegie Hall and the like. So you can be as good as you are today and then get a break. So this gentleman needs a break. Esther needs a break. I needed a break. We all need a break. But the bottom line is, you know, when he's talking about driving and the gas is insane now, and that's all political stuff. But the truth is, if you don't put yourself in Chicago, L.A., or New York, quite frankly, from my estimation, and really be seen by some of the movers and shakers out here, whether you want to be an actor or not, it's really difficult to move up the financial scale because the club owners are going to say, well, you didn't do this show, you didn't do that show, and we're not going to give you diddly, you know. So, you know, on one hand, they're right, because if you don't draw people in, they have the right not to pay the act as much. But, you know, to stay in one area, and it's tough to make a life move like that, but it's almost impossible not to. I can't tell you how many rock and roll friends of mine who never made it because they stayed in Columbus in Ohio State and didn't take the shot and move out to L.A. So, you know, you got to make that choice.
You going to take that advice, T.L.?
Oh, yeah. Well, I've always been told to move to one of the bigger cities, but right now I'm just looking for management first.
Okay.
You know, just
do
get out
well,
there,
by the way, regionally like that. And if you have a manager, I always would hang out, buddy, with people who were ahead of me and way more successful and liked me and watched my back. And then I wouldn't burn any bridges. The thing I learned early as a comedian, and Esther knows too, is that, like, open mic night in 1971, man, that's a long time ago. Before I did the Improv, which was a big club back then in New York, it's no longer there. And it was for free, of course. I did the Village for 6 months until David Brenner, who was a legendary comedian, said, "I'll come see you, and when I think you're ready, then you'll do open mic night." And I did, and I blew the roof off because 99% of the other acts never went on stage before. They brought a couple of friends down, and they stunk. But I was like almost like a seasoned vet. So I always tell young comedians, like, Go to a deli who has, you know, just practice, get a good half hour, and then go to the Comedy Store and the Improv and whatever the other clubs in the big cities, and you'll be 99% ahead of everybody else, because most people don't do that. They just think they got to get on stage first, and then they'll never get back to that club in years sometimes.
Right.
Good luck to you.
Well, thanks, Neil. Bye-bye.
So long. Let's try Charlie. Charlie's calling us from the road in Milwaukee, Wisconsin.
Hello, this is wonderful that you're doing this show.
Well, thank you.
I can't believe anybody even cares.
Yeah, me neither.
Yeah, really, really. Well, I have been. Actually, I met Richard many, many years ago.
Was that before I got sober or after?
A thousand years ago, I guess.
Oh, boy.
I've been doing stand-up for about 25 years. I'm a headliner, work all across the country.
Fantastic.
And I think it really depends on what you want out of the business. I agree with Richard that if you're looking for the TV and all the rest of it, you've got to be in New York or L.A. But I've done this for 25 years. Nobody knows who I am. I headline every club I work, and I make a fairly decent living at it.
You sure
do. So it's like, you know, it's not all bummers. It's not, you know, not like you. It depends on what you want.
That's right.
I think it really does. And it's getting harder now, obviously.
What kind of lifestyle you want?
Comics, less clubs. They don't want to pay the money. Gas is high. But you got to be willing to bust your butt. That's really what it comes down to. You got to make the phone calls. You got to get out there and push and, you know, hope that again, like Richard's saying, I grew up at the time, like he did, that everybody helped each other.
And it sounds
I wish there was more of that in this business now.
And Charlie, it sounds like you represent yourself. You're trying to hustle the jobs on your own.
Well, I do a lot of it myself because the one thing I learned in this business is nobody cares whether you're working as much as you do.
Thank you.
I also have a part-time manager that who used to be my full-time manager, but if he wasn't going to work, then that means I got to go out and do it.
I understand.
And it's a pain, but it's part of the business. And that anybody in you know, unless you're a lot higher up on the rung than I ever got, you do a lot of it yourself. And it's not, you know, I live in a nice house. I've been married for 24 years. I have a good life.
Wow.
You know,
he made a really
55 years old and having a great
point. Charlie, hold on. Go ahead, Richard. I'm sorry.
No, I apologize. I would just say that what he said was so articulate and so on the money. Look, life's a short journey, you know, and the truth is, he's doing very well, and he's a success. Someone might say, I'm not a success unless I win an Emmy or an Oscar. That's their right. But, you know, there's a lot of people who don't have to have HBO specials and consider themselves failures if they don't. You know, he's a successful, act for 25 years, lives a great life, has an ongoing marriage, and that's more than 99% of the world. So, you know, that's the problem with a lot of people in the business. It's just people think that you have to have, you know, you have to live on top of Mulholland and, you know, and have 300 bedrooms to be a success, and that's just not where it's at. So this comedian, you know, has the right attitude.
Esther, would you be willing to right now sign up for Charlie's career?
Yeah, I would. My goal in comedy is to make my sole living, make my, you know, my bread come out of comedy full time. So that would be amazing if I could do that.
Right.
All right. Charlie,
Good luck, Esther.
Thank you.
I hope to see you out here on the road. It's a little hard, but it's wonderful. I'm in Milwaukee this week. I'm in Seattle in a couple of weeks. I travel all over. It's a beautiful country. Come
on. You always think in those plugs? You got to do that.
That's it. You know, it's a beautiful country.
I can speak in 16 cities now, but I'm not. I want you to look stupid.
Charlie, good luck to you.
It was a joke, Charlie.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
And Charlie didn't laugh, that scared me a little bit.
All right. Esther, we hear horror stories about life on the road, and, a lot of what Richard writes about in his memoir is about his alcoholism and learning to deal with it and that. But life on the road is tough. It's tough on marriages. It's tough on people's livers. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, you know, it's weird for me being so young and, like, seeing, like, how many comedians have come before me, and a lot of them were drug addicts and alcoholics, and I don't know if that makes you a better comedian or if I should stay away from it or delve into it because, you know, there's so many great comedians who were, you know, living that lifestyle. I don't know, you know, it's like what caused what, you know?
Yeah, it's what comes first, the chicken or the egg, Richard Lewis?
No, I got to tell you something. You know, I've been sober a long time. I know most of the people I know who are recovered drug addicts and alcoholics are not in show business. It's just, it's a tremendous, and there's more enabling going on if you're in show business than say you work for a plumbing supply company. But, you know, because they'll want you to go do your show even if you're falling down drunk so they can get their percentage, their commission. But that's more than, maybe you'll be a nice owner of a catering firm will say, hey, listen, you're not going to put this bar mitzvah on. We're going to send you to a doctor. But, I mean, listen, it's an enabling business. You're around liquor and booze all the time. But, you know, you can wake up every morning and say, how do I want to live my life, regardless whether you're in show business or whether you're an engineer.
We're talking with Richard Lewis and Esther Koo, both comedians, about the business of comedy. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Tim is on the line. Tim's on the road in South Carolina.
Hi, how you doing tonight?
All right.
Tim. Tim, are you on the road as a comedian, or are you on the road, are you a hitman?
I am on the road as a comic. I actually liked hearing Charlie speak. He was inspiring, but
yeah.
I'm in the same boat of working. I've built up the headline. I'm working every weekend that I want, meaning about 3 weekends a month. I'm on my way right now down to Florida, and that's another thing. Traveling from North Carolina to Florida for a gig, 10 hours one way. By the time we get done doing it, I don't know how Charlie's doing it. I'm booking all the gigs. 3 years ago, I was all right. Right now, I'm thinking about walking away from the only thing I've ever loved this much, you know?
It's the traveling and all that stuff. It's, you know, when you get on stage, that's the easy part. It's getting there, and it's getting on that. Hearing your name is the fun part, and hearing the last. But, boy, I don't care how high or low you are on the scale of, you know, notoriety, it's still a bitch to travel no matter what you do, unless, of course, you're, you know, you're so well off, you have private planes and posses and all that crap. But, I mean, it's not crap. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have that, fine. But, man, it is. He's right. And, you know, if you... You know, you can take, you know, remember that there's that French tennis player who was 25, won 3 French Opens, she quit at 25, and then Martina Navratilova said, why don't you just take a break, you know, because she couldn't believe that she quit after all this success and so young. But the bottom line is, you could take a break, pal, and think about it and come back in a year without making a big decision like that and putting so much pressure on yourself.
That's true.
Yeah. And Tim, you're heading down to Florida this weekend and appearing at a club one night only or a couple of nights?
Yeah, I'll be there actually Friday and Saturday at Joke Boys in Ocala, Florida.
All right. Wanted to let you get the chance to get the plug in there. Good luck to you, Tim.
Thank you guys very much.
Yeah, have a good break a leg, man.
You talked a little bit, Richard Lewis, earlier about George Carlin. He died earlier this week, and of course, and that's one of the reasons we wanted to do this program, because he made it possible for a lot of pioneer in the business and helped a lot of people get into the business. And as you think about his humor, we just have a couple of minutes left, but as you think about his humor, what do you think made him so special?
Well, he was one of the great wordsmiths who ever lived. He was one of the most, if not the most prolific comedian that ever lived. He had an amazing work ethic. He was unbelievably edgy. And the one thing that I find astonishing, because, you know, he was 71. When he was in his 20s and 30s, he was like he did great but commercial bits in a sense. I mean, you know, Hippy Dippy Weatherman. He made a transformation. You know, forget the drugs and all that stuff. He made a transformation into like following along the lines of Lenny Bruce and Richard Pryor. And, you know, so to make that kind of that change in his style as a comedian, I can't think of anybody really. I mean, it's almost like, and I don't say this disrespectfully, if Carrot Top, you know, became Brando, you know, I mean, that's almost how much of a change Carlin did in his own persona, which to me was astonishing. No one really used the English language as well as he did on stage. He was clearly a genius.
Well, Richard Lewis, thanks very much for being with us today, and we appreciate your time.
My pleasure.
Richard Lewis's book is The Other Great Depression, How I'm Overcoming on a Daily Basis at Least a Million Addictions and Dysfunctions and Finding a Spiritual Sometimes Life. That's his book out. And Esther Koo, thank you for your time today, too, and best of luck on Last Comic Standing.
Thank you.
Esther Koo is a comedian, a semi-finalist on NBC's Last Comic Standing. Up next, pregnancy packs and the real facts about planned and unplanned teen pregnancy. Stay with us. I'm Neil Conan. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.